PwC's National Office presents the quarter close, December 5th, 2018 edition, read to you by Mark Jerusalem. The sections in this edition include 1. Year-end reporting reminders and leases, 2. Accounting hot topics, 3. Regulatory update, 4. Hot off the press. First section, year-end reporting reminders. This edition of the quarter close provides the quarter's latest accounting hot topics and developments in financial reporting. In addition, to help companies heading into their annual reporting, we have included an appendix, Annual Reporting Considerations, which provides a listing of topics that continue to present challenges to financial statement preparers and links to where you can find more detailed information. First topic, leases. Calendar year-end public business entities, PBEs, are required to adopt the new leases standard effective January 1, 2019. While preparing to do so, lessors should consider the impact of the FASB's recent amendments, which address certain accounting issues specific to lessors. Additionally, as lessees and lessors move beyond the accounting impacts, their focus should be on the standard's disclosure requirements, which will be effective beginning with the first quarter of the year of adoption. Lastly, as companies are preparing their year-end reporting, they should also ensure their SAB 74 disclosures have become more robust as adoption approaches. New guidance. In October 2018, the FASB tentatively approved new guidance that provides certain simplifications and clarifications of the accounting by lessors. This new guidance would allow lessors to make an accounting policy election to exclude sales tax and similar taxes collected from lessees from contract consideration. In addition, the new guidance would require that a lessor exclude from variable consideration all lessor costs that are explicitly required to be paid directly to a third party by the lessee on behalf of the lessor, for example, property taxes or insurance. This means that the lessor would report revenue net of these amounts. Costs that are not part of contract consideration that are paid by a lessor to a third party and reimbursed by the lessee are considered lessor costs and would be accounted for as variable payments by the lessor. Therefore, the lessor would report these amounts gross on the income statement. Further, the new guidance would clarify that variable payments allocated to non-lease components should be recognized in accordance with other guidance, for example, the new revenue standard. Refer to PwC's in-brief, US 2018-25, More Changes to Ease Lessor Adoption of the New Leases Standard, for more details on this guidance. The final standard is expected to be released before the end of the year. Disclosure requirements after adoption. In an effort to increase transparency to financial statement users, the new leases standard expands the disclosure requirements for lease arrangements. Companies should focus on evaluating the readiness of their systems, processes, and internal controls to capture the information and data needed to prepare these disclosures. As a reminder, SEC rules require companies to provide both the annual and the interim period disclosures for each interim reporting period in the initial year of adoption. So, for a calendar year end PBE, a company will need to have all annual and interim lease disclosures starting with its March 31, 2019 quarterly filing. The new leases standard has a number of qualitative disclosures. Companies are required to disclose the following: key terms, significant judgments and assumptions, accounting policy elections, practical expedience, and related party leases. The disclosure of significant judgments and assumptions should include those used to determine whether a contract is or contains a lease, separate lease and non-lease components, and allocate the consideration among them. While these qualitative disclosures apply to all companies, there are other disclosures specific to lessees and lessors. For example, lessees are required to disclose leases that have not commenced that create significant rights or obligations, while lessors, for example, are required to disclose strategies for managing risks related to the residual values of leased assets. There are also a number of significant quantitative disclosures required. Many of the quantitative requirements for lessors and lessees are similar, except that they reflect opposite sides of the lease transaction. For example, companies are required to disclose certain profit and loss information. For lessees, this includes disclosing the costs of their leases, for example, rent expense, while for lessors, it relates to the profits generated from their leases, for example, rental income. For more information on the presentation and disclosure of lease arrangements under the new lease standard, refer to Chapter 9, Presentation and Disclosures of our Leases Guide. Additionally, in Episode 42 of our CFO Direct podcast series, we provide further insight into the new lease standard and share some reminders for companies to consider as they prepare to adopt the new guidance. SAB 74 considerations. SAB 74 requires a company to provide information on the status of their analysis and the impact that adoption of new standards will have on the financial statements. Calendar year-end PBEs will adopt the new LISA standard on January 1, 2019. Therefore, prior to their 2018 annual filing, companies should be virtually completed with their implementation and their Form 10-K should include robust SAB 74 disclosures. These disclosures should discuss the expected impact of adoption of the new LISA standard, including the expected classification of lease arrangements, any material assets or liabilities to be recorded, and the practical expedience to be adopted. In our study of SAB 74 disclosures on the potential impact of adopting the new LISA standard in annual and quarterly filings of the S&P 500 companies between October 1, 2018 and November 9, 2018, we found 49% of filings noted the potential impact of adoption to be material. 7% of filings noted the potential impact of adoption to be immaterial. 21% of filings included only qualitative disclosures, and the remaining 23% either included no disclosures or had not yet determined the impact of adoption of the new standard. Next section, accounting hot topics. First topic, fair value measurement disclosures. In August 2018, the FASB amended the fair value disclosure requirements by issuing ASU 2018-13. These changes arose from the FASB's disclosure effectiveness project. The amendments removed, modified, and added certain disclosures. While this is not an exhaustive listing, the following provides an overview of the more significant amendments. The new guidance removes several disclosures as follows. Disclosure of the valuation processes related to Level 3 fair value measurements. This did not amend the requirement to disclose the valuation approach and techniques used for Level 2 and Level 3 valuations. Disclosure of transfers between Level 1 and Level 2 and the related policy for the timing of transfers. And finally, for non-public entities only, as defined in the ASC Master Glossary, disclosure of changes in unrealized gains and losses included in income for recurring Level 3 investments. The new guidance also modifies several disclosures, including the following. Companies with investments that calculate a net asset value are required to disclose the timing of liquidation and when restrictions from redemptions might lapse only when the information is publicly announced or communicated by the investee. The previous guidance required an estimate when the information was not publicly announced or communicated by the investee. And for non-public entities only, as defined in the ASC Master Glossary, in lieu of a Level 3 roll forward, companies can disclose transfers into or out of Level 3, the reasons for the transfers, as well as Level 3 purchases and issues by asset class. Finally, the new guidance also adds several disclosures for public companies as defined in the ASC Master Glossary as follows. Disclosure of the range and weighted average of significant unobservable inputs used to develop Level 3 measurements, as well as the method used for calculating the weighted average, and disclosure of changes in unrealized gains and losses and other comprehensive income for recurring Level 3 measurements. The amended guidance is effective for all companies in fiscal years beginning after December 15, 2019. Early adoption of the standard is permitted. Companies may early adopt the provisions that remove or modify disclosures without early adopting the requirements to add disclosures. The guidance requires that the removed and modified disclosures are to be applied retrospectively, while the added disclosures are to be applied prospectively. For more information, refer to in-depth US 2018-19, Changes to Fair Value Disclosure Requirements, FASB reduces some disclosures. Next topic, simplified disclosures for pension and post-retirement plans. The FASB amended the disclosure requirements for employers that sponsor defined benefit pension or other post-retirement plans by issuing ASU 2018-14. This amendment, issued in August 2018, was also a result of the FASB's disclosure effectiveness project. The new guidance removes six disclosure requirements in an effort to streamline employers' disclosures while retaining those that are most relevant to financial statement users. Furthermore, the new guidance added two new disclosures and clarified the disaggregation disclosure requirements for plans in which benefit obligations exceed the fair value of plan assets. The disclosures removed include the amount and timing of plan assets expected to be returned to the employer, amounts in accumulated other comprehensive income expected to be recognized as components of net periodic benefit cost over the next fiscal year, certain related party disclosures, disclosures related to the June 2001 amendments to the Japanese Welfare Pension Insurance Law. Next, for PBEs only, the effects of a 1 percentage point change in assumed healthcare cost trend rates. And finally, for non-PBEs only, the reconciliation of the opening and closing balances of Level 3 plan assets. Companies will still need to disclose the amounts of transfers into and out of Level 3 of the fair value hierarchy and purchases of Level 3 plan assets. The disclosures added include the weighted average interest crediting rates for cash balance plans and other plans with promised interest crediting rates, and an explanation of the reasons for significant gains and losses related to changes in the benefit obligation for the period. The amendments apply to all employers that sponsor defined benefit pension or other post-retirement plans and are effective for calendar year-end PBEs on January 1, 2020. Early adoption is permitted and retrospective application is required. Next topic, quick cut on valuation of inventory in a business combination. In November 2018, the AICPA issued a working draft of its guidance on the valuation of inventory acquired in a business combination. This non-authoritative guidance provides considerations companies may find helpful when determining the fair value of inventory acquired in a business combination. This working draft will be a chapter in a comprehensive AICPA Business Combinations Accounting and Valuation Guide to be released at a future date. The AICPA released the inventory valuation guidance in advance of the complete guide to seek feedback from valuation specialists, industry professionals, and accounting firms. Comments to the AICPA are due by February 1, 2019. Next topic, accounting for long-duration insurance contracts. In August 2018, the FASB issued guidance, ASU 2018-12, that revises key elements of the measurement and disclosure requirements for long-duration insurance contracts issued by insurers and reinsurers. It is the biggest change in U.S. GAAP for life insurers in the last 40 years. Under the new guidance, insurance companies are required to update, at least annually, the insurance cash flow assumptions used in the calculation of the net premium ratio and the resulting liability for future policy benefits for certain long-duration insurance contracts on a retrospective catch-up basis. This primarily affects whole life, term, long-term care, and payout annuity contracts. The guidance also standardizes the interest rate used to discount those insurance cash flows, which is required to be updated at each reporting period, that is quarterly, through other comprehensive income. The term market risk benefits is introduced to identify certain contracts or contract features that have other than normal capital market risk, that is, equity, interest rate, and foreign exchange risk. Market risk benefits are required to be measured at fair value. The new market risk benefits guidance applies to various types of guaranteed minimum benefits in both variable and fixed annuity contracts. Straight-line amortization of deferred acquisition costs over the expected term of the related contracts is required for almost all types of long-duration investment and insurance contracts. deferred acquisition costs will no longer be subject to an impairment test. Significant additional disclosures will be required, including disaggregated roll forwards for all of the key long-duration balances. The new guidance also requires additional quantitative and qualitative information about significant inputs and assumptions used to determine those balances. The new guidance is effective for calendar year-end PBEs on January 1st, 2021. Other entities will have an additional year. Earlier application is permitted. Upon adoption, the transition date, that is the remeasurement date, is the beginning of the earliest period presented in the financial statements, which would be January 2019 for calendar year-end PBEs. Companies will therefore need to restate their previously issued financial statements back to the earliest year presented. As a result, companies will need to begin to capture and retain additional data as early as January of 2019. For more information, refer to In-Depth U.S. 2018-20, detailing the new accounting for long-duration contracts of insurers, and watch our video, New Accounting for Long-Duration Insurance Contracts. Next topic, FASB guidance, past, present, and future. There are over 25 new FASB accounting standards updates that will be effective for calendar year PBEs in 2018, 2019, 2020, and 2021. The quarter close print edition includes a graphic that lists each standard grouped by the year the standard is effective for PBEs. For further details, also refer to PwC's Effective Dates for New FASB Guidance page on cfodirect.com. Next section, regulatory update. First topic, SAB 118 reminders. SAB 118 gave companies in the period of enactment the ability to account for the effects of U.S. tax reform on a provisional basis when they did not have the necessary information available, prepared, or analyzed in reasonable detail to complete the accounting. SAB 118 provided a measurement period during which the company could complete its accounting. The measurement period is complete when a company's accounting is complete, but in no circumstances extends beyond 1 year from the enactment date of December 22, 2017. This means that all companies must complete their accounting for the impacts of tax reform by the end of this year. For more information on the accounting impacts of tax reform, refer to our in-depth U.S. 2018-01, Frequently Asked Questions, Accounting Considerations of U.S. Tax Reform, and watch our tax reform video series, the latest of which addresses valuation allowance considerations post-tax reform. Next topic, quick cut, SAB 74 disclosures for CECL standard. The new standard on credit impairment is expected to have a widespread impact and is effective for 2020 for calendar year end PBEs. Consistent with any new standard, companies should ensure that their SAB 74 disclosures become more specific as the effective date of the standard nears. Companies should disclose information on the status of their analysis and the impact that adoption of the standard will have on their financial statements. Next topic, SEC speech on digital assets. Digital ledger technology, for example, blockchain, and digital assets, for example, cryptographic assets or digital tokens, are technologies that continue to evolve and expand. Wesley Bricker, chief accountant of the SEC, shared his views on financial reporting considerations related to recent innovations in technology and commerce at the AICPA National Conference on Banks and Savings Institutions in September. In his remarks, Mr. Bricker stressed the need for companies to maintain appropriate books and records regardless of whether distributed ledger technology, smart contracts, or other technology-driven records are used. Mr. Bricker also stressed that companies must understand innovations in distributed ledger technology and digital assets to ensure that they comply with federal securities laws related to maintaining books and records, internal accounting controls, internal controls over financial reporting and custody. He noted the emergence of new technologies, despite their exciting possibilities, do not alter a company's fundamental responsibilities. The following are some of the considerations highlighted by Mr. Bricker for management, auditors, and audit committees with respect to digital assets. First, to support their explicit and implicit financial statement assertions, promote the integrity of the independent audit of the financial statements, and promote the reliability and completeness of the financial information filed with the SEC, companies must assess the knowledge of their accounting staff and the sufficiency of their policies, systems, and processes before acquiring digital assets. Second, because sellers and purchasers of digital assets recorded on distributor ledgers are generally anonymous, companies must ensure that they have appropriate processes to identify and disclose transactions with related parties as required by Regulation SX, GAAP, and IFRS. Beyond disclosures, identifying such transactions is especially important when reporting amounts at fair value, as fair value measurement assumes that an asset is exchanged between market participants who are buyers and sellers, independent of the reporting entity, that is, not related parties. Third, digital assets may expose an entity to litigations, claims, and assessments when, for example, private claims follow a government investigation or enforcement action for failure to comply with securities laws. Companies should consider published results of enforcement actions taken by the SEC, state regulators, and others, such as FINRA, in addition to their own experience, the experience of other companies, and the views of legal counsel and other advisors when assessing if accrual and/or disclosure is required. Finally, audit committees' processes to initially select and subsequently retain the external auditor should include an evaluation of the auditor's qualifications with digital assets, including a consideration of the auditor's regulatory and litigation experience and access to legal and technology specialists in the area of digital assets. Audit committees should assess the impact of instances in which the auditor declines or is unable to issue an unqualified audit opinion. For further discussion of Mr. Bricker's speech and an overview of the September conference, refer to in-depth U.S. 2018-21 AICPA National Conference on Banks and Savings Institutions. Holders and issuers of cryptographic assets may encounter a variety of complex accounting issues beyond the considerations highlighted by Mr. Bricker. The diverse range of rights and preferences associated with different cryptographic assets requires consideration of a broad set of accounting guidance. For examples of accounting considerations that both issuers and holders should evaluate, please refer to our Point of View, Cryptocurrencies, Time to Consider Plan B, and our in-depth Cryptographic Assets and Related Transactions, Accounting Considerations under IFRS. While the in-depth addresses accounting issues under IFRS, given convergence in certain key accounting standards, for example, accounting for revenue from contracts with customers, we believe many of the accounting considerations are similar for U.S. GAAP. Next topic, SEC's cybersecurity enforcement. There are SEC rules designed to protect confidential customer information and to protect customers from the risk of identity theft. The SEC charged a broker-dealer and investment advisor with violating two of these rules, that is, the safeguards rule and the identity theft red flags rule. In September 2018, the company settled the charges and agreed to pay $1 million related to its failures and to follow adequate cybersecurity policies and procedures surrounding a cyber intrusion that compromised personal information of at least 5,600 of the company's customers. This was the first SEC enforcement action charging violation of the identity theft red flags rule. Given the continued rise in the number of cyber intrusions and the SEC cybersecurity rules in place, companies should ensure that they have the appropriate procedures and controls which are reasonably designed to fit the company's needs. Companies also need to regularly review and update those procedures and controls to respond to changes in the risks that companies encounter. The SEC also issued interpretive guidance on cybersecurity disclosures earlier this year. The interpretive guidance expanded on the 2011 SEC guidance and highlighted the importance of maintaining policies that effectively address the fact that cybersecurity risks and incidents can constitute material non-public information. Furthermore, the interpretive guidance emphasizes the importance of maintaining sufficient disclosure controls and procedures to ensure relevant information about cybersecurity risks and incidents is processed and reported in SEC filings. Companies should consider filing a Form 8K to report material cybersecurity incidents. For more information on the SEC's interpretive guidance, See in brief U.S. 2018-07, SEC issues interpretive guidance on cybersecurity disclosures, and our publication on Rethinking Cybersecurity Disclosures to Investors. Next topic, SEC simplification and disclosure requirements. On August 17, 2018, the SEC adopted amendments to eliminate, modify, or integrate certain disclosure rules into other SEC requirements. The amendments are part of the SEC's efforts to improve disclosure effectiveness. The amended rules became effective for SEC filings made on or after November 5, 2018. The amendments eliminate redundant and duplicative requirements which were substantially similar disclosures as U.S. GAAP, IFRS, or other SEC disclosure requirements. Overlapping requirements which are related to but not the same as U.S. GAAP, IFRS, or other SEC disclosure requirements, including the elimination of the ratio of earnings to fixed charges. Outdated requirements, which have become obsolete as a result of the passage of time or changes in the regulatory, business, or technological environment. Superseded documents, which are inconsistent with recent legislation, more recently updated SEC disclosure requirements, or more recently updated U.S. GAAP. Although the amended rules generally reduce disclosures, some provisions added disclosure requirements. This includes a requirement for companies to provide an analysis of changes in stockholders' equity for the current and comparative quarter and year-to-date interim periods. There is no specified format that must be followed to present this interim information. However, the disclosure must be presented in the form of reconciliation, either as a separate statement or in the footnotes. The SEC subsequently published clarifying guidance indicating that the SEC staff would not object to companies including the first presentation of their changes in stockholders' equity in its Form 10-Q for the first quarter beginning after the amendment's effective date of November 5, 2018. For example, a calendar year-end company may include it for the first time in its March 31, 2019 Form 10-Q. For more information on the SEC's amendments to update disclosure requirements, see in brief U.S. 2018-21, SEC Simplifies and Updates Disclosure Requirements, and in brief U.S. 2018-22, Implementing the Recently Adopted SEC Rules. Next topic, Quick Cut, Proposal to Simplify Guarantor Disclosures. The SEC's proposal to simplify the disclosure requirements for registered debt offerings that contain guarantee or collateral features, that is, Regulation SX, Rules 310 and 316, was published to the Federal Register on October 2, 2018. Under the proposed SEC rule amendments, companies would generally provide less quantitative information about guarantors and collateralizations. The proposed amendments include replacing the consolidating financial information and/or financial statements with summarized financial information and non-financial narrative disclosures. The comment period for the proposal closed on December 3, 2018. The proposed rule amendments are intended to provide investors with material information and to make the disclosures easier to understand. This would also reduce the compliance burden for companies and may encourage more companies to offer guaranteed or collateralized registered securities. These features typically reduce interest rates and therefore may reduce companies' cost of capital. For information on these proposed amendments, see in brief U.S. 2018-17, SEC proposes to simplify disclosures about guarantors and collateralizations. Next topic, SEC comment letter trends. Based on the SEC staff comment letters made public during the year ended September 30, 2018, the number of comment letters issued by the SEC staff in most industries has decreased when compared to the year ended September 30, 2017, although the SEC staff's focus areas remained generally consistent. We did note a decrease in the number of comments related to the use of non-GAAP financial measures from 2017 to 2018. Of the top 10 most frequent SEC comment letter areas for the year ended September 30, 2018, we noted that the most frequent area of comment was non-GAAP measures. However, total comments in this area decreased year over year. Total comments in the next 9 most frequent areas of comment did not change significantly year over year. These topics are fair value measurement, Management's Discussion and Analysis, Revenue Recognition, Segment Reporting, Goodwill and Other Intangibles, Business Combinations, Income Taxes, Terrorist Nation Sponsor Reporting, and lastly, Form Compliance and Exhibits. For more information on comment letter trends by sector, see the SEC Comment Letter Trends page on CFO Direct. In the Q3 2018 edition of the quarter close, we discussed some of the areas addressed by the SEC staff's comments related to the new revenue standard. Since that edition, we have not seen any significant changes to the areas of focus. The following areas continue to be among those addressed by the SEC staff related to the new revenue standard: identifying performance obligations, estimating transaction price, timing of recognizing revenue, principal versus agent assessments, costs to obtain a contract, and disaggregated revenue disclosure. For more information, refer to our Stay Informed SEC Comment Letter Observations on the New Revenue Standard publication, and listen to episode 43 of our CFO Direct podcast series, which includes additional details on SEC staff's comments related to the new revenue standard. Next topic, Brexit. Now is the time to act. With just months to go until the UK leaves the EU, there is increasing discussion regarding whether companies are ready for the impact of new trading and border arrangements. While UK and EU companies face specific challenges, Brexit will have implications for many other companies as well. Companies that are likely to be impacted include companies that sell or buy high volumes of goods or services to or from the UK or EU, have complicated or highly integrated UK-EU supply chains, particularly those that operate just-in-time production, are heavily reliant on the UK for staff, whether temporary or permanent, operate in highly regulated areas, whether services, for example, financial or legal, or goods, for example, chemicals or pharma, sell or buy goods or services to or from one of the over 50 countries with which the EU has a free trade agreement, have high levels of third country content in products sold from the UK to the EU and may not be able to meet rules of origin in a future free trade agreement, move personal data in and out of the UK, benefit from UK or EU research and development grants and other funds, invest in UK-based assets from overseas, operate in the UK or EU and are heavily regulated and have operational complexity. The UK is expected to leave the EU in March of 2019. The parties are working to negotiate the details of the withdrawal. Even with a draft agreement on Brexit, the details of a new trade deal between the UK and EU will not be clear for some time. The outcome with the biggest disruption is a no-deal outcome, in which the UK would exit the EU without coming to an agreement on the terms of its withdrawal. This risk will continue to exist until a deal is ratified by both the UK and EU parliaments. Some companies are waiting to act until some of the uncertainty is resolved. However, given the short timeline and the potential implications, companies should be taking the following steps now to be prepared. Know your supply chain. Clean up your current data. Think about new data requirements. Engage with key third parties. Check out your contracts. Take advantage of existing government programs. Plan to be agile. Support your people. And determine the impact to your financial reporting. While planning for Brexit, companies should be assessing the impact to their operations, along with legal, accounting, tax, and other economic implications. Given the potentially challenging political environment, companies should be prepared to react quickly to new developments. When speaking at Financial Executive Institute's November 2018 Current Financial Reporting Issues Conference, SEC Chairman Jay Clayton voiced his concern that the potential impact of Brexit on financial reporting has been understated. Mr. Clayton said that the SEC is focused on disclosures about the risks associated with Brexit. While preparing year-end financial reporting, companies should consider the impact that Brexit will have on their trends and disclosures, including those in MD&A and their risk factors. Next section, hot off the press. First topic, collaborative agreements. In November 2018, The FASB issued an amendment, ASU 2018-18, to clarify the accounting for certain collaborative arrangements. Under the modified guidance, companies will have to assess whether transactions between collaborative arrangement participants are within the scope of the new revenue standard. The distinct guidance and the new revenue standard will be used to identify the units of account within a collaboration arrangement. If an entire unit of account is a transaction with a customer, companies will apply the new revenue standard to that unit of account, including all recognition, measurement, presentation, and disclosure requirements. If an entire unit of account is not a transaction with a customer, companies can apply elements of the new revenue standard or other relevant guidance by analogy, or apply a reasonable accounting policy if there is no appropriate analogy. Transactions outside the scope of the new revenue standard must be accounted for separate from revenue within the scope of the new revenue standard. However, the guidance does not prescribe any specific presentation for these transactions. We believe that there will be instances when it is acceptable to present transactions in the scope of the collaborative agreements guidance as revenue, as long as such amounts are not combined with revenue from contracts with customers. The amended guidance is effective for calendar year-end PBEs on January 1, 2020. Early adoption is permitted after or in conjunction with adoption of the new revenue standard. For more information, please refer to in-depth U.S. 2018-22 FASB Clarifies Guidance on Collaborative Arrangements. Next topic, quick cut, new benchmark interest rate for hedge accounting. Due to the anticipated phase-out of LIBOR, in October 2018, the FASB issued an amendment to the hedge accounting guidance, ASU 2018-16, that adds the Secured Overnight Financing Rate, or SOFR, overnight index swap rate to the list of U.S. benchmark interest rates eligible to be used for hedge accounting purposes. This amendment will provide companies time to prepare for the anticipated transition from LIBOR to SOFR and make the necessary changes to their hedging strategies for both risk management and accounting purposes. The amendment is required to be adopted concurrent with a new hedge accounting guidance. For calendar year-end companies that have already adopted the new hedge accounting guidance, this amendment is effective in 2019 for PBEs and 2020 for all other entities. However, it can be early adopted in any interim period. Please refer to the print publication for the appendix of year-end reporting considerations, including a listing of topics relevant to 2018 year-end financial reporting. The appendix also includes references to PwC publications where you can find additional information on each topic. This has been the Quarter Close, December 5th, 2018 edition. For PwC, I'm Mark Jerusalem.
This podcast is brought to you by PwC, all rights reserved. PwC refers to the U.S. member firm or one of its subsidiaries or affiliates, and may sometimes refer to the PwC network. Each member firm is a separate legal entity. Please see www.pwc.com/structure for further details. This podcast is for general information purposes only and should not be used as a substitute for consultation with professional advisors.